Welcome to the Everyday Ultra Podcast, a show designed to help you level up your training, crush your races, and ultimately become a better endurance athlete every single day. Whether you're an endurance athlete as a hobby or someone who wants to be the best in the sport, this is the show for you. I'm your host, Joe Corcione, and thank you so much for listening. Now, let's get into it. What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Everyday Ultra Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Corcione, and really thankful that you're here. And I'm super excited to record this episode because this is going to be a race recap of a 50K that I recently did this past weekend here in the Phoenix, Arizona area called the Elephant Mountain 50K. And you may already know this, you may not know this, but I actually came out in first place, which was amazing, and was super, super excited to get the win at the Elephant Mountain 50K, and it was my first race of the season. It was actually a tune-up race for me, so not really a goal race necessarily, more so of a fitness tester, which I'll kind of talk about, but was really stoked nonetheless to get first place and get the win, and most importantly too, and I think this is like a good thing to note, and I'll talk a little bit more about this in the podcast, is I was really happy with the result that I ran, because sometimes even if we place high or we do relatively well, like in terms of where we are at the leaderboard, I know it's a reality sometimes we can be unhappy with our performance or think we can do better, and I was super pleased with how the race went. So no regrets, no qualms. I'm really, really happy about that result. And I think in the end of the day, whenever you're running a race, my suggestion all the time is this a result that you were happy for, regardless of like what place you're in? And that's the true victory in the end of the day. Anywho, we're going to cover a lot in this episode. We're going to cover my hydration, my nutrition strategy, my pacing strategy, what I did to get through the mental highs and the lows, how I kind of played the competition out there, and whole nine yards on that as well. So I'm super, super excited for that. Before we dive in, though, I also want to give a huge shout out to this amazing product that I use out there, which was Hydropac's new flask called the Sky Flask. And this is amazing for so many reasons. So I use this as my primary hydration vessel out there, and it's a handheld. But what's super cool is the handheld actually straps into your hand in a way where you don't have to grip it, so it can just hang off your hand, but it can still be there for easy access, which was amazing because this was the first race I've ever used it. I used it in my training beforehand, but I usually will race with handhelds in faster races like a 50K or a 50 miler. And I used to always get like super sore hands from gripping it, but now I can just let it kind of free flow, and it was amazing, and it got to carry it really, really well. Plus, it was durable, it never leaked, it was comfortable to hold in my hand whenever I had it, and also too, when I was finished with it, I could squeeze it and then smash it into my hydration belt, which made it easy access too, which was super cool, which you can't really do with the hard cap bottle. But I think the coolest part about this product was that they have something called a speed fill cap, and what was super cool is like instead of like unscrewing the bottle and then like handing out my handheld and having a volunteer pull it up, all I had to do with just my thumb was just flick open the top, and then the volunteer could fill up the water, and then I flip it closed, and then I was good to go. So there's been many times where I've like fumbled the bag of just like opening and twisting open the thing, or like trying to twist it shut and then it starts leaking, and then I'm like, oh my gosh. This was a simple pop open, fill it up, click, and then you're good to go. And it saved me tons of time in my aid stations. And my whole aid station time, I think, was about like 2 minutes and 30 seconds, which was pretty awesome. And I usually like to fill up at aid stations too. It's not like I don't like to blow through a lot of aid stations. I did do one of them, but that's just because it was early on in the race, and I'll talk about that too. But I like to be as efficient as possible and also stopping at the aid stations. And so if you're looking to get that in a hydration apparatus, so to say, or a handheld, the speed cap is a great way to go. And the Sky Flask is a great way to go if you're looking for a handheld that is solid. Plus, if you're looking for any soft flasks that you can use in your hydration vest, or if you're looking for a bladder or anything like that, Hydropac is the way to go. They have a warranty, so in case it breaks, you can replace it. And at the same time, too, they're leak-proof, they're durable, they're comfortable, and they are amazing. And so I partnered with Hydropack, and they're giving you 20% off your order if you go to their website at hydropack.com and use the code EverydayUltra20 at checkout to get 20% off your order on anything you buy, whether it's the handhelds, bladders, anything like that. And you can go to the link in the show notes to that website, which is hydropack.com, HYDRAPAK.com, and use the code EverydayUltra20 at checkout to get 20% off your orders, whether it's handhelds, bladders, anything like that. You can get that there, and I cannot recommend them enough. So hope you use that. Stay hydrated on your races and hope the Sky Flask gives you just as much success as it did to me on race day. All right. Now, wanted to say that shout out first before we dive into all the details of the episode, which we're going to get into right now. So Elephant Mountain 50K. What is Elephant Mountain if you're unfamiliar? So Elephant Mountain is actually a local Arizona race put on by Aravipa Running. And even though this is a local race, Aravipa is not a local company. You probably know one of their ultra marathon races, such as Javelina 100, Black Canyon 100K and 60K, Cocodona 250. They have a myriad of really, really globally famous races in the Arizona area and also Colorado as well. And they've just put on so many great events. But what a lot of people don't know is that they put on a lot of local races in the Arizona and Colorado area and also in the East Coast now. And they're expanding like pretty heavily, which is super cool. But what's a benefit about being in Arizona is like you can pretty much race almost any weekend in the fall, winter, or early spring because the weather's so nice and Aravipa puts on a race nearly every weekend, which is super cool. And so for me, when I was looking at like my race schedule and where I wanted to test certain things, it's nice because Elephant Mountain lined up perfectly for what I wanted to test doing this 50K in my training block itself. And so with this, right, this was essentially a tune-up race for me. So this wasn't like an A race. This wasn't like something that was, you know, hey, I want to target this. This is like what I'm training for and everything like that. This was more so a tune-up race to a larger goal. And for me, that larger goal is Cocodona 250, which is in May. So May 6th is the start for that. And so this was a tune-up race in my training for Cocodona 250. Now, why do I love tune-up races? And this is a good piece of advice for you listening if you're training for, you know, your A race, whether it's a 100-miler, 50-miler, or even 50K, whatever distance that you're training for. If you have the time, the money, the resources, the availability to get tune-up races in your schedule, I 100% recommend it. And when I'm working with clients too, and we're putting together a race plan, if those things didn't exist, like I mentioned before, right, the monetary restrictions or travel restrictions or anything like that, I would pretty much require all my athletes to do a tune-up race. Now, I know for everybody, that isn't always the case, and that's totally fine. So that's why I don't make it a requirement, but it's highly suggested. And the reason why I highly suggest tune-up races is because you get to test where you're at in your training in a race scenario in the middle of your training block. And the alternative option that you can do to do this is by doing a race simulation kind of run, right? So where you're doing a self-supported 50K or 50-miler in your, you know, local areas, local trails, anything like that, there is a way where you can put on your own race simulations, which is great. And it's awesome. And you don't have to pay any money. You probably don't have to travel too far. Like you can get that simulation done. But the reason why I like the race setting is because you get a lot of variables that are really hard to replicate when you are doing just like a race simulation run on your own, right? So the big thing is the, you know, just having the other racers there, whether you're competing or whether you just like to be in the environments where you're around a lot of people, or you like to use that to your advantage for like passing people and things like that too. Having the extra people there is huge too. The second thing is aid stations. Aid stations are great because you get to really, really hone down not only your aid station efficiency strategy, which is also important, but also to the gear that you're going to be bringing from, you know, aid station to aid station. Because if I'm going out and doing a long run and I'm going out on the trails, if I were running that same route that I did at Elephant Mountain 50K, I would not be carrying two handhelds with me. I would be carrying a bladder and a like soft flask and a ton of extra water and a ton of extra gear. And so that's not really the great simulation of what I wanted to do to test those kind of strategies. Now, granted, for Cocodona, there's the argument that that would help, but I also wanted to test my strategy and like efficiency in a 50K setting in and itself. So I think that is, you know, something to really just hone in on that you can get in a race setting, but can't necessarily get in a training run scenario, which is great. The other thing too is just like being able to race is a great way to break up your training. And training is awesome. Don't get me wrong. I love training. You should love your training too. But let's be honest, if you go months and months and months of training, and sometimes there's, no race in between, it can almost start to feel a little bit more mundane or a little bit more routine, right? And having a race and having that excitement of the community and the people around and the environment and maybe seeing new trails that there's a new race for you, having that as almost like a checkpoint throughout your training is just a real great way to not only check where your skills are at in the training, but ultimately to give you a reset of, oh yeah, like this is exciting. This is awesome. This is breaking up the, routine of training and kind of putting us in a new environment here. So for all those reasons, I just love a tune-up race. Now, a lot of the questions that I've gotten is saying like, hey, if you're racing for a 250-mile race, like why are you doing a 50K tune-up? It's a great question. It's a very, very different race. And I'll talk about like kind of pacing in the context of like where the tune-up race kind of leads to practicing for your goal race and how that kind of worked for me with Cocodona. But for me, like even though a 50K is like incredibly different than a 250-mile race by far, I really just wanted to test my fitness and where I was at. And a 50K is a great race to just test fitness, like sheer fitness, because 50K is one of those distances in the ultra world. It's the lowest distance in the ultra world, officially, I should say. I mean, I guess if you're running like 27 miles, that would technically be considered an ultra. It's the lowest mileage of the well-known ultra distances, right? 50K. And, you're generally going to run that way faster than you're going to do a 100 miler or, 250 miler or anything like that. So it does rely a lot more on fitness, where of course fitness is incredibly important. And you have to rely on that for a 100 miler, 250 miler, 100K, all those kind of things as well. But there is such a large mental element to that. Whereas like a 50K, I'm not saying there is no mental element for it, but if you want to like go out and, PR like a 50K, like really one of the big things that you want to increase is like your fitness. So for me, like being that this was a very early stage race in my training, and I was coming off of an off season and really just wanting to see like where my fitness is at, which has been a lot of my Cocodona training, which by the way, I'm going to be recapping the Cocodona training in the next episode coming out, not this one, so I won't go too deep into the Cocodona training, but I had been pretty much just building fitness up for Cocodona over the past few months, and I kind of wanted to see where it was at. And the way that I was able to really test that, I mean, and there's kind of two ways that you can test this when it comes to a tune-up race, and so I'll kind of start there and then talk about what I did for this race. So when you're looking at a tune-up race, there are kind of two ways that you can pace it in order to see if your training is hitting the mark. The first thing is if you want to test sheer fitness, like I mentioned before, what you would do is you would simply race that tune-up race to the capacity of that distance that you're racing in. So in simpler terms, what that means is you would race a 50K as in like, I want to try and get my best possible 50K effort given the scenario here, right? You're leaving nothing in the tank at the end. You're going hard. You're sending it. Like you are racing that like a 50K as if it was like, that's the distance you're going for. And of course, that might seem obvious. It's like, why wouldn't you do that? And that's where the second option for a tune-up race comes in. And although it doesn't make sense in the realm of like what I was doing for Cocodona, because I probably wouldn't do it given this discrepancy, and I'll explain in a bit. But this is a great thing to do for like 50 milers when you're training for a 100 miler. And anyways, without further ado, what I'll explain this pacing strategy is you go into that tune-up race and you pace it as if in the end, you are confident that you can continue to go the distance that you're training for. So let's just say we are training for a 100-mile race and we have a 50-mile race as a tune-up. And we were going with the second option that I mentioned before. How you would pace that 50-miler, or how would you approach that 50-miler, is at the end of that finish line, if that is going to be your goal, you want your goal to be, yeah, I feel like I can go another 50 miles. And that's why I love like the 50-mile tune-up race for 100 miles, because it's very conceptual. It's basically, can I just do what I just did again, right? Because it's 50 times 2 equals 100. 50K, obviously, for Cocodona is very, very big difference. It was so funny because when I finished the race, actually, the race director, Aaron Barber, looked at me and he said, "Well, Joe, you got 220 miles to go." And I thought that was so funny. But I would never do this kind of strategy for a 50K for Cocodona, just because the Cocodona pace compared to a 50K pace, even if you were taking it really easy in a 50K, is going to be dramatically different. And so I don't even think, even if that was kind of my goal, I just don't even think that would be good for a 50K. Like, where that would be good for, you know, Cocodona would be like maybe doing a 100-miler or doing a 100K, and all those kind of things as well. But for me, because that was kind of on the table, how I wanted to pace this was like, I want to run a solid 50K effort. And so that was kind of my pacing strategy on there. Now, for me in the past, like usually the way that I've raced 50Ks before is like, I just like go out from the start and just like run hard for 30, like 31 miles. That has kind of been my strategy in the past. And it's worked. Like, I mean, the, you know, I've won a 50K before, and, some of the other 50Ks have gone pretty well, and some of the other 50Ks have not gone great. So it's kind of been like all over the place. And so I really wanted to look at this and be like, you know what, I kind of want to pace this a little smarter. And it wasn't from like the perspective of I wanted to kind of see what that would look like finally racing a 50K race that was like more smarter pace than just me just kind of like gunning it from the start, because I really, really want to focus. And I know this is like a constant thing that I'm always trying to focus and hone on in races and training, is the concept of finishing strong. And I know when it comes to Cocodona, that's going to require the strongest finish that I will ever, I shouldn't say ever, but like that would be the most one, probably the strongest up to that time, of the strongest finish I'm going to need to require in that moment, so to say. So, because of that, that's how I wanted to pace this race, was to practice that concept of finishing strong and going out easy in the beginning to really kick up the jets towards the end. And so in terms of like a lot of people were asking, they're like, what was kind of like your target pace or things like that? For me, I don't like to race by pace unless I am trying to go by, unless I'm like trying to like really go for course record or anything like that, which was one of my goals, like on this thing for sure. I didn't get it, but it wasn't my main goal, so I wasn't going out of it. But I like to race by intensity. So with that, I mean, you know, am I racing at a 4 to 5 RPE or 2 to 3 RPE, which RPE, by the way, if you're unfamiliar, is rate of perceived exertion, which basically means on a scale of 1 to 10, how hard are you pushing? And so if I'm racing a 4 to 5, then I'm pushing at a 4 to 5 intensity out of 10 in that given moment. And that's how I like to generally race these kind of races, and or any race for that matter. And so for this one, usually like the way that I would kind of race 50Ks is like I would just go off the bat at like a 5 and then like creep closer to like a 6 or a 7 towards the end. And what I really wanted to do for this race was like I want to really start around like a 3 and then, you know, really maybe at the end like start to kick it up to like a 4 to 5, and maybe if I have it in the tank, a 6 to 7. And that's where I kind of wanted to pace it. So I wanted to go a lot easier than usual. And again, I'm not focusing on pace, I'm just focusing on effort itself. Because if you're focusing on pace and you don't take into account the elevation changes of the course, the ups, the downs, the technicality of the course, which was definitely a factor in this one. And although it wasn't a technical course, I'll talk about what that is later on, which made definitely a factor in terms of the pacing. That is something that, you know, is really hard to pin down with just like a separate pace, unless you know the course incredibly well and like you can hit the paces on there for sure. So that is where it is. Or the other way I would say too, if you're kind of going by pace, another way that can really help is like if you're trying to avoid cutoffs. So sometimes when you're racing a race, you might be worried about the cutoffs or might be worried about like hitting certain checkpoints. With that as well, then I do like to essentially go by pace, because it gives you a benchmark of like what you need to do and go under in order to hit that time. But if you're like 100% confident that you're going to hit the cutoff times and you are pretty, or I shouldn't say pretty, but you know, pretty unfamiliar with the course, I guess I should say. I don't know why I said I shouldn't say that, but if you are pretty unfamiliar with the course and you are confident that you are going to make the cutoffs, it's really good to go by intensity on there as well. Now, one of the questions that I got asked on Instagram to cover in this podcast, which by the way, if you sent in a question, I will take it at the end of the podcast. I've tried to weave it into the outline of what I'm talking about on the show. So likely I'll answer it along the way, but if I don't answer it specifically, then I will answer it at the end of the show. But for why you know, racing a good 50K was going to test my fitness. Like I said before, it is, you know, 50K is a pretty fitness heavy kind of race, but I also wanted to kick it a little bit. I wanted to see where my jets were at and everything like that. And a lot of people are saying like, well, why does that translate to Cocodona? It's because if you're fit and, you know, you can kick it on a shorter distance, that fitness can translate to the longer, slower kind of stuff. Because in the end of the day, like if you're getting fit, you're going to get fit in general, right? So if you're working a, you know, if you're training for like, let's just say a road marathon in the pursuit for a 100-miler, you're still getting really fit at that point. And that fitness is going to help to carry over to the 100-mile distance. Now, I'm not just saying like, you know, training for a marathon is going to equate to running a successful 100-miler. And I'm also not saying that running and, you know, running and training for a fast 50K is going to translate to Cocodona. What I'm saying is that fitness is going to translate. You do need to embark on the specificity of that race on top of that fitness to really get to the goals that you need to be. It's just that in my training right now, I'm mostly just focused on fitness base building at first, and also doing some speed work development as well to really just work on a lot of the fitness before I work on the specifics, which is always something that is like training advice 101 when it comes to structuring a training plan. Is your first and foremost focus in your training plan further away from the race should be two things. Number one, it should be getting fit and building the fitness and doing the least specific work away from the race while also honing in on your weaknesses, right? So those are kind of like the things that you want to work on early on in your training. Then once you get fit, once you work on the weaknesses, once you work on the least specific stuff, then you can go closer to the race. You can work on the most specific stuff. You can work on your strengths, and you can work on the things that are very, very race specific on top of that as well. And even so, like your number one thing that you should be working on no matter what in training, whether you're training for a 100-miler, 250-miler, 100K, whatever that is, your biggest focus should be building fitness. And the reason why I say that is because in the end of the day, you can have all the technical and the course specific or the race specific skills in the book, but if you're not fit enough to get to that finish line, it's going to be really, really hard, or it might be just a struggle to kind of get through there as well. So like fitness is always king. And so that's why I'm really working on fitness first before I work on like sleep deprivation training or, you know, long back-to-back training camp days or, you know, doing a very, very long effort for Cocodona kind of training, right? Those are very Cocodona specific stuff. For me, I want to just focus on just building fitness. And so that's where it's at. And so the 50K was a good time frame for that. All right, so that's the 50K on there as well. The one thing that I really thought was super cool about this race, and at the time, right before, it wasn't always like the coolest thought, but like I thought this would be a good practice. Now, for those who know, and also those who don't know, I got married the week before, 2 weeks before Elephant Mountain 50K. So we had our marriage here in Phoenix, Arizona. It was an amazing day. It was awesome. And then right after that, so we got married on January 20th, and then January 21st, we left right to Costa Rica for our honeymoon. And during that honeymoon period, I ran twice, two times throughout a week. And it was like a, I'm trying to think of the days. So we left on Sunday and then we came back like Monday night. So about, you know, 8 day period, I ran twice. And this was the week before Elephant Mountain 50K. And was it ideal for training? Absolutely not. Was it something that I recommend everyone to do? Absolutely not. If you can run, you know, the week before a 50K, 100% do it. The reason why I did it is, you know, I made an agreement with my wife to say like, hey, you know, we're going to wake up in the morning together. And because a lot of times whenever we're traveling and doing vacation or we're on the road, most of the times in order for me to be there throughout the day, like I will run early in the morning and usually we'll get back right before whatever we need to do for the day. But, you know, we made the agreement and said, hey, because it's our honeymoon, we're going to wake up, you know, with each other every day. And, you know, if we want to hit the gym one day, which we did, and that's where we went to go run, that would be the case. And so it was unplanned. And so I was able to get in, you know, two runs throughout there, but definitely not ideal right before a 50K. And let me tell you, during my honeymoon, you know, I ate a lot. We didn't get the best sleep a lot of the nights. And so you're traveling a lot. You're doing a lot of hiking, doing a lot of adventuring, all this kind of stuff as well. So it's like not ideal training conditions. But in the end of the day, like, and this is another conversation I had with a client who is also doing something right before a race where, you know, their training is going to be quote unquote less than ideal. I always say, like, if you have something that really, really excites you or really is important to your life, and you know, it doesn't lead to ideal training situations, if it aligns with your value system to be in that position, like, yeah, like go ahead and don't feel bad about it. Like, make that trade-off. Like, it's okay. It's going to be okay to do those things because, you know, well, although, you know, you listen to this podcast and me even talking too, like, running is important to all of us. Like, we all have big goals. Like, if you're listening to this podcast right now, you have a big goal for running, and running is a huge part of your life. At the same time, likely there are other priorities in your life too that are also very, very important to you. And I truly believe to be a good ultra runner, you shouldn't be blowing up the other priorities of your life. And so because of that, I would say, like, if there is something that comes up that isn't the most ideal training situation, do it. And I'll give you an example. I'll give you two more examples of how I'm living this out in my life. With Javelina, 3 weeks before Javelina, I paced Sally McRae 70 miles at Moab. And a lot of times people are like, wow, that's like really aggressive to do right before Javelina 100, a goal race. But I was like, I really want to help Sally. Like, she's a dear friend of mine. I know this goal means a lot to her. And like, I value that experience. And looking back on it, that was one of the best experiences of my life. Like, I wouldn't trade that in for a second, even though the training conditions weren't quote unquote ideal. This weekend, I'm pacing my friend Melissa Osaszewski, longtime guest on the podcast. She's been on the podcast 3 or 4 times, I believe, and she is awesome. Such a great friend. But I'm pacing her 26 miles at Black Canyon 100K. Not ideal for training, but I want that experience. I want to be there for her, supporting her. I want to help her, you know, to crush that race. And so I make this point to say, like, you know, don't like get overly stressed about, like, you know, showing up for, you know, a kid's, you know, game on the weekend when you have like a long run planned, or, you know, doing the family vacation right before your run or things like that. Like, if those things mean something to you, like, go for it. And your training, if you put in a good solid training block, it shouldn't matter to take, you know, 3 days off or a week off or anything like that. And I think that's like the important thing to know is like, or the important caveat I should say is like, you know, as long as you have very, very good training, you can take a few days off to spend time doing the days, spending time with another priority, even if it's right before a race. And so that's the big thing that I definitely want to, you know, say on here, and I really want to encourage for a lot of people who, you know, want to do those things. But again, the big caveat with that is that your training has to be strong. When I did Javelina, with the pacing with Sally before, my training was incredibly strong. I felt really good about my training, you know, going into the honeymoon and taking the week off after that. And even leading up to Black Canyon, like, I feel pretty still good with my training, especially after the win at Elephant Mountain. So I'm feeling good about all those things. So just want to say that, you know, don't get so caught up in the prioritization things. There was actually another awesome article, and then I'll kind of get off this topic for a second, but one of my clients sent this article to me that I thought was amazing. And in the article, the person who was writing it was training for, I believe it was Badwater or some like crazy race. And he had this like super long run planned. And right before he was about to go on his long run, his son, I believe, or whoever, his young child said, "Hey, can we go on a run together?" And at the time, he talks about like having all of these like negative thoughts pop into his head, just like, oh, like, you know, you can't run with your son because you need to get this 4-hour run. And if you don't get this 4-hour run, and then you're going to suck and you're going to be fat and you're going to be out of shape. And like all this stuff started going through his head. But he realized in that moment that, you know, he wanted to be a great dad. And he said, "Yeah, sure, son, like, go get the shoes and like, let's go run." And they only ran for like, you know, a quarter of a mile or something. But he said that was not only like the one of the most rewarding runs of his life, but he even said that was like the hardest challenge of his life, because he had to like fight all this like, you know, what ifs from his head. But in the end of the day, like, where the whole article comes full circle is that, you know, he felt really, really good about it. So I know I'm going a long time on this topic, but like, it is something important that I think a lot of people, and just know that if your training has been solid, even if you take off, and like, this is another thing too, it's like, you know, you take off a week because maybe you get sick, or like work is super crazy, or you're dealing with some sort of like personal issue or things like that, like, you're not going to totally lose fitness. And this was another reason why I was interested in the 50K right after the honeymoon, is because I really wanted to train for the unexpected, right? Because with Cocodona, and I'm really hoping I don't speak this into existence right here on the mic, but I'm giving like an example. It's like, you know, I'm racing Cocodona. There's always a risk. There's always a risk that the week before you can get sick. There's always a risk that like the week before, you know, something might happen. Maybe like I take a trip on like a shakeout run and like, you know, something happens to my leg or whatever, right? There's always a risk that something's going to happen. And what I wanted to practice in this moment and the way that I kind of reframed it, because I'll be honest, like when, you know, there was no running at the honeymoon and then like looking at the race, like, of course, the things pop in my head is being like, oh, like, am I going to lose fitness? Am I going to gain pounds on this trip? Like all this kind of stuff started popping in my head. And then I started to think about it and I said, you know what? This is actually a great way to practice being able to show up despite unideal circumstances. Because even though I'm making this conscious choice to go and do this honeymoon and the conscious choice to not run during the honeymoon, there are going to be times where I don't make the conscious choice when a roadblock maybe comes into my way that are going to lead to unideal travel situations right before a race. And I wanted to learn how to not only race well despite that, but to fully trust my training at the start line that I've done well. And I think that was the big thing, because like when I was at that start line, even the day before, I felt good. I felt good about my training. I felt good about it. And I was like, you know what, this is going to be great. And I'm glad that I practiced that, because I know that no matter what, in a race in the future, if there are quote unquote unideal situations that come in with training beforehand, I know that as long as my training is solid, that I'm going to show up on race day and I'm going to do what it takes to not only perform well, but also have the confidence in myself that I can be able to do this despite a crazy situation. So that was just on there as well. So just wanted to set that table. And I know it was a long thing, but like that was honestly like one of the biggest takeaways for me with this race. Like I posted about the race on Instagram, and the big thing was like the week after I got married and was on my honeymoon, I won the 50K. And it wasn't like this post to say like, oh, I'm going through all these amazing life events. It was more so to say like, it's very unideal to run a 50K right after your honeymoon, but I was able to do it and I was able to win. And I'm not saying like that should be the standard for everybody, but like at the same time, like I want people, if they have good training, to be confident enough to be able to be okay with unideal training situations, even if they pop up right before a race. So that was kind of the big thing. Okay. So there's that. And I know I'm like really hammering hard on this, but like that was the biggest takeaway of the race, which is why I really wanted to double click on it here on the podcast right here. So to say, so one of the big things that I also got asked about this race is my nutrition and hydration for the race. So this is something that I have just always been so adamant on, because it is so, so freaking important, especially in like a 50K where you're going a little faster than normal and you're going to be burning a lot more calories out there. So I knew I needed to be diligent. I knew I had to be timely with it, and I knew I had to really hone down on it. And one of the things that I've gotten really, really gotten much better at this in the past, but one of the things that I really wanted to work on was just being absolutely diligent in my training. If I found myself in the lead or on the chase for first place, and still being diligent in my nutrition, because a lot of the times what I've just noticed in the past for me, and I'm sure a lot of people can relate, is if, and I'm not talking about if you're in like a winning race situation, if you're like in a groove and you're running and all of a sudden like your watch goes off and says, hey, you need to eat, or you look at your watch and you know you need to eat at that point, sometimes the brain can say, oh, like, first of all, you're feeling good, you're moving good, you don't need to like fiddle around in your pack and pull out that gel and take the gel and like all that kind of stuff. Like, you're good, keep going. Like, you're gonna ruin your mojo if you do that. Like, don't do it, just keep going. And listen, I get that all the time, and I told myself, I was like, when that voice comes in my head, I'm gonna tell it to shut the fuck up, and I'm gonna take the damn food, and I'm going to drink, and I'm gonna be diligent on this. And so, because I had a confidence that, you know, this had a really good shot to win this race. And so for that, I knew that was going to be a thing, and I really wanted to hone in on that. So what was my exact nutrition and hydration strategy? So hydration was pretty, pretty simple for me. All it was taking in one soft flask every single hour at least. And then anything that I would need more than that, I would obviously drink to thirst. And so no matter what, even if I wasn't feeling thirsty, I would get down at least one of the handhelds that I was using, which was the Hydropack Sky Flask, and it was 500 milliliters, so 17 ounces of water. I would get at least one of those in every single hour. And if I was thirsty, I would drink more according to thirst. And so that was my general strategy for water intake. Now, what's super, super interesting, and I'm sure you've heard me on the podcast say this before, and if you're maybe your first time listener or haven't listened to me talk about this before, you might have heard me say that I usually tend to drink around like a liter an hour. The reason why I didn't drink a liter an hour in this race is because the temperature is way, way lower. And the temperature does directly impact how much water you're going to be taking in. Because if it's hotter, you're going to lose more liquid. And ultimately, you're going to want to take in a little bit more water. Whereas if it's a little less cooler, a little less warmer, that was the right word there, you're going to sweat less and you're not going to need to replenish as much. And so for me, what I did, and this is something that, you know, if you listen to the hydration episode that we did a while back, we talk about this extensively, but you can do a sweat rate test, which is totally for free. You don't need any equipment either, except for a scale. And I did a sweat loss test, and I saw that, you know, when it's around 50 degrees outside, which is what the high of the temperature for the race was, then I generally lose about, you know, 17 to 20 ounces of water an hour, so to say. But when it goes to really hot temperatures, which in Arizona can get up to, you know, 100 degrees, I can lose anywhere between like 1.25 to 1.75 liters an hour. So it is a big, big difference. So when it's hotter out, then I'll tend to stick to more of a liter an hour. But because it was a little bit cooler, I went down to 500 milliliters an hour. And then sodium wise, I targeted to get about 600 to 700 milligrams of sodium every single hour. And usually most of that sodium came in the in from the nutrition that I was taking in, but most of it actually came from salt pills. And then I actually had a supplemental handheld in my naked belt that had NAC hydration mix into it as well, which I'll kind of talk about as well, where I kind of just supplemented that. And I drank that like more if I like felt like I needed a little bit more calories or I needed a little bit more sodium, or if I just wanted something sweet to take in. Because one of the big things, and this was like a game changer for me when it came to like energy management in a race, is they did a study once where they looked at athletes and they tried to measure or like test out the effectiveness of like carbohydrate intake for performance. And what was really interesting about the study was not only did they come to the obvious conclusion that like carbohydrate intake does increase performance in endurance events, but what was really, really interesting about the study was that they found that performance also increased when people just took in the carbohydrate drink, is what they used. I don't know exactly what the drink was. It might have been like Gatorade or something like that, but regardless, they would put the carbohydrate drink in their mouth, they would let it sit there, and then they would actually spit it out. So they wouldn't actually ingest it. And even just having that in their mouth ultimately led to an increase in performance without them actually ingesting it. And so there is this signal inside of our brain that goes off when it tastes something sweet to almost prepare our body for like higher performance, where it's just going to kick us into a higher gear. It's almost, I don't want to say like a placebo effect, but like our body associates that sweet stuff with like energy is incoming and almost kind of like creates the energy mentally and propels our body forward. So like for me, like what I would do, and there was a few times in this race, I didn't really hit like a low in this race, but there was a few times where I like hit like, you know, I was hitting a little bit of like a wall, and you would go ahead and I would just like take that hydration mix, I would just sip it in, and I would just feel like night and day and just like keep rocking and rolling. And so like if to practice that in your own training is if you are at a low point, but maybe you've already taken in the calories, you're doing well in it. If you just have like a gel or something sweet or a chew or like whatever, you can just like put it in your mouth and then like, you know, just take it in a little bit. And just that little intake of that sweet thing is going to help to propel your brain to keep going, even if you're not ingesting it. So it's a super cool thing. Now, that's not to say don't just like put stuff in your mouth and like not ingest it. Like you need to ingest calories or else you're going to bonk. But it's a good way to supplement those things, you know, if you need a little bit more pep in your step when you're out there as well. Now, nutrition wise, I've been going through a whole nutrition kind of protocol like over the past few months, because at Javelina I did pretty well on the nutrition front, but here's kind of like where I really want to hone in for Cocodona. So Cocodona is a very, very long race, 250 miles, very, very long. And with Cocodona, you're going to be out there for, you know, 70, 80, 90 hours, wherever, right? And I have a feeling, because I've noticed that the longer that I go in distances, the more food options I'm going to need at my disposal, because pretty much in almost any longer distance race that I've done, I've found that some things that work in training, it's not necessarily they don't work in the race, but like they'll be good for like 4, 5, 6 hours. And then after like the 6th hour, I might be either sick of the thing or my body might just not want it. So I know that like for these longer races, I'm going to need as many options as possible if the thing that I'm relying on is something that I'm going to get sick on. And if I'm thinking about that experience and I think about 250 miles and being out there for 70 hours, if I just rely on like 1 or 2 or 3 food sources, I'm pretty much almost guaranteed to be fucked because I'm sure that like one of those is not going to sound good down the line in the race. So for me, I've been trying to get as many things as possible that are good in my stomach to get down. And so one of the newest kind of products that I've tried for nutrition is NAC's line of products. So NAC is spelled N-A. I don't like, it's a weird A. It's like one of those A's with those two dots on the top. I don't know exactly what it's called, but it's N-A-A-K, NAC. And they're an interesting company because they have like products, but like it's a very unique proprietary blend of nutrition ingredients, so to say, for lack of better terms. But what they do is like they put like more like complex carbs. It's a little bit more slower burning kind of stuff as opposed to like faster burning kind of carbohydrates that we're generally kind of used to in like gels, like goo and things like that. But the cool thing is it also has protein available in there as well. And for me, even the past 2 javelinas, like I've struggled with like leg soreness a lot. And so I wanted to test out using a little bit of protein on my runs. And I was always skeptical of it because as an ultra running coach, and knowing how the human body processes energy, the big sources of energy, your biggest source of energy as a runner is carbohydrates, right? But fats are also a source as well. And protein isn't really a source for energy. It's more of this like muscle repair thing. So for years, I was kind of on the train of like, yeah, protein is not necessarily necessary in an ultra. And I still to this day believe that it's not necessarily necessary in an ultra. However, where I was trying out with the protein on this is saying like, hey, like I can maybe add in protein into my running so it can start to repair my muscles a little bit more as I'm running through the race and see if that works. And, you know, in this race, I did not get sore at all, which was great. And I was super, super grateful for that. And I also used another like pain relief tool that I'll kind of talk about midway through the race, but that helped a ton too. But you know, in my training, even for Cocodona, I've never felt sore once. Even on like the really long runs that I've done, no soreness, felt pretty good. And I do attribute a lot to this like protein intake that I've been doing. And it's not even a lot of protein. It's like, you know, anywhere between like 4 to 12 grams an hour. So it's like not that much. And even the 12 grams an hour, it's not like a frequent thing. Like it's really more around like, you know, 4 or 8. And I found that it really has helped a ton. And so that's kind of the products that I've been using. Now, the mix of the products that I was using out there was the electrolytes drink mix was in one of my handhelds that I had stowed away in my naked belt, and that was really supplement. And like my main source of calories is using the NAC puree. So they have this like puree, which is pretty much like a gel, and it's in like this pouch. And in the pouch, it would have 200 calories, 26 grams of carbs, and 5 grams of protein in there as well. And so I was taking a lot of that. So I was taking around 2 of those an hour. So it was about like 50 grams of carbs, 400 calories, and 10 grams of protein-ish an hour, so to say. And I would also like supplement with other things like at aid stations, like bananas and chips and watermelon and like other stuff that I would have like at the aid station. So my general strategy was to get anywhere between 350 to 400 calories an hour with at least 75 grams of carbs. And I know even if I just took 2 of those packets, like it would be probably around like, you know, 50 grams of carbohydrates. But if I got more carbohydrates from taking in the, you know, chips at an aid station or watermelon at an aid station or anything like that, I would try and get to around that, you know, 75, 80 grams of carbs an hour. And so that's what was generally my strategy to get in. And usually is, you know, the reason why I said like 350 to 400 is because, you know, for 400, I like that for 100 milers, but I wanted to kind of just play around with like a little lower kind of calorie. So like 350, more so around that just because a 50K is a shorter distance. Now you are going a little bit harder as well, so you are burning a little bit more. So There is also the argument to say, like, hey, 400 is going to be good for that as well. But I didn't want to, like, totally overload my stomach by going a little faster, because I do know that if I do go faster, sometimes, like, my stomach, you know, is a little bit more sensitive. So I am very, you know, cautious of what I'm putting in my belly for those faster races, for sure. So that was generally my strategy, 350 to 400 calories an hour, targeting around like 70 grams of carbs. Most of the calories came from Knack's puree, the apple flavor. I do really, they have like a sweet potato flavor, but I really wanted more like the apple flavor out there, because I feel like that does better just out there for me. Just like, it's a little bit more sweeter kind of stuff. And then I would supplement with potato chips and watermelon at each aid station. And those extra potato chips and watermelon would probably round it out to about like 70 carbs an hour, which was great. So I wouldn't get like the full two packets of those Knacks in an hour. And it was nice because they kind of had like a screw tab on it. So it's not like a gel, like once you open it, it's like, all right, well, you got to take it all now, or this thing's going all over your belt or your vest. It's got like a nice cap on it. So I would usually like take one, and then I would take about like half of one. And then usually like at the aid station when I would hit it, I would go ahead and have watermelon, or mostly watermelon, just because it was like very high carb, low calorie kind of stuff. And I wanted just more supplemental carbohydrates without adding too much calories in. And yeah, that was the approach that I was taking nutrition wise. And yeah, felt great the entire time and felt really, really good and fueled and made a lot of good decisions out there. So I was like super, super pumped about that, because like I think with any ultra, any long run, if nutritionally you're doing well, it is generally a very, very good sign for you if you are, you know, in those longer efforts, because it does play such a pivotal role in your success on race day and even in long runs as well. So it's just something to definitely nail down when it comes to like long runs or races for sure. And glad I had a great strategy out there for sure. Which, by the way, like I'd gone through a whole kind of period in training where I was really just like strengthening my stomach. And this is something that I talk about in the last episode I did in nutrition, but really the big thing is like, you want to be able to train your gut just like you train your legs, and you train your legs by putting miles on it so it can run with a lot amount of miles. You also want to train your gut to be able to, with a lot of food when running, to be able to train it to digest more efficiently when you are on the run. So like for any run that was 2 hours or more, I would generally be eating out there in the same quantities, not in aggregate, but per hour that I would in the middle of a race, just so I can train my stomach to efficiently digest while on the run as well. So That was my I don't know if you can hear that, but that was my nutrition and hydration strategy for the Elephant Mountain 50K. All right, now let's get into the actual race recap. And now that we've kind of gone through all the logistics and all that kind of stuff, here is the race recap of the race itself. So the date of the race, if I'm pulling up my calendar, because I don't remember the date exactly, but the date of the race was February 3rd, so Saturday, February 3rd. And it was a cold, cold morning here in Arizona. So us Arizonans, man, like anytime it gets below like 45 degrees, it is like sub-zero temps to us. And I know a lot of people listening on the Midwest or the East Coast are probably laughing at me, being like, oh man, he's such a wimp. What the heck? But let me tell you, when you're used to a lot of really nice weather, those colder temperatures can feel brutal. And I know like a lot of you playing the world's smallest violin and being like, ah, boohoo, like whatever, like, you know, we have to deal with snow outside. I get it. Like, I deserve all that. So please, like, yes, I deserve it 100%. But I was pretty cold at the start line. And one of the things, like for me, that have always been something that I've just kind of like learned. So I get cold very, very easily. Like I get very cold. Like I will wear a sweatshirt in 65 degree weather, like, and still be a little chilly. Like that's just the kind of person I am. And I wasn't always that way, but when I moved to Arizona, I think I got that way. But I would be notorious for starting a race with like way more clothes than I needed to. And then like I would be either burning up like midway through because I didn't want to like lose the gear that I had and like strip off, or like I would have to like strip off and essentially like lose a nice piece of gear, all for the sake of being cooler. So I did wear like a very thin t-shirt underneath, along with, not t-shirt, very thin long sleeve shirt, to start. It was very thin though. So like, I knew it was like, all right, it's going to keep me warm. I'm feeling really cold right now, but I know when I warm up or when I, you know, start running out there, I'm going to get warmer. And this thing like should be pretty good. The forecast wasn't calling for a lot of sun. So I was like, okay, like the solar stuff might not be that bad out there. So I think I can wear this and get away with it. And I wore a t-shirt over my long sleeve shirt, because the reason why I did that is because I like to if I did have to change out the shirt, like at the start finish, which had like a drop bag strategy or a drop bag place, I can just like go into the start finish, take off the long sleeve shirt, put on the short sleeve shirt right on top, and get that going. And also for me, like I like to pin my bib on the shirt. I don't like to pin my bib on my shorts. I did that once and it just, I don't know why. I think it's just like a personal preference thing for me. And so I knew if I had it on the short sleeve shirt, I knew I'd be at least wearing that every time. So I didn't want to like pin it on the long sleeve shirt and then have to like repin it. And yeah, just trying to streamline the whole things and the what ifs if possible. But that's why I wore out there, wore a pair of shorts. And then I wore Nike Ultraflies for the shoe. And I was ready to rip, and it was awesome. Like right before the race, I got to see my good friend Melina, which was her birthday, and it was actually her first trail ultra, which was super exciting. And, you know, just got to chill. And I even got to see one of my clients out there, which was absolutely amazing. So Kelly is one of my clients. She's so incredible. She is awesome. She is an ultra running badass. She's a mother. She's a hard worker. And to see her at the start line right before was truly special. And she finished the 50K, spoiler alert for her race, but she finished the 50K and she battled a lot of ups and downs and made it happen, was so resilient out there. And it was her first race post-surgery, which was just super, super inspiring to see. And so to see her there at the start line and giving her a hug and wishing her the best was just absolutely incredible. And so it's always just awesome seeing my clients in person because I generally work virtually. And so to see her in person there at the race, ready to tackle her big 50K goal was super, super incredible. So Kelly, shout out to you. You are amazing. You are awesome. And just super grateful for you in every way and very, very proud of you, my friend. So I wanted to give you that shout out here. There's people who listen to the podcast who came up to me. Shout out Kelly. I met a listener, and I don't know if you're listening, Kelly, but if you are, it was so great to meet you. But met a listener from the podcast who came up and was saying like this was her first ultra, which was super exciting, which, by the way, she came first female, which was amazing. So congratulations, Kelly. But it was so good, you know, getting to meet listeners of the podcast and seeing out there, which, by the way, if you ever see me at a race or an event or anything like that, which, by the way, if you're going to be at Black Canyon 100K this weekend, I will be there. Please come up and say hi. I love, like, one of the best things about going to these events is meeting the listeners. And I always love that because it's just a great way for me to thank you for all your support, because I wouldn't be where I'm at today without the support of the podcast. So just know, I say that if you do see me at an event, whether I'm racing or whether I'm just there hanging out, or if you even just see me on the streets, happenstance somewhere, please say hi. I really, really love meeting y'all in person. So it means the world to me. But anyways, hey everybody, just want to take a quick break in this episode because I partnered with a company recently that has just been a game changer when it comes to clothing and apparel that I'm wearing on my long runs. And the one thing that I get frustrated with when it comes to running gear or apparel in general is when it doesn't last long. Whether it rips, tears, or just wears away, it sucks to have to keep buying new stuff. Plus, doing that isn't sustainable for the planet. But I recently started trying this gear that lasts long, has a 5-year guarantee, is super comfortable, has extremely fun colors, which is so important, right? And helps to support clean water programs around the world. The gear is from John G, and you gotta check them out. They make high performance running apparel such as shorts, tanks, shirts, jackets, and more, all built to explore the world on the run. Not only do they have a 5-year guarantee where they will replace any product that wears away, but their stuff is super comfortable, breathable, and easy to move in, especially in the winter months when you're bundled up a ton. Plus, 2% of their sales go towards nonprofits working on viable clean water solutions, so it's a way to give back and feel good about where your money is going. They have super bright colors and artwork designed by talented artists all across the world, so you'll stand out on the trail, which is, like I said, one of the most important things. My favorite products have been the Transit Tech Short and the Run All Day Tee. I like the Transit Shorts because they're lightweight, easy to move on my runs, especially when I'm climbing hills or doing faster efforts, because they don't have a liner. And when you don't have a liner, I feel like you can move around a lot better when it comes to doing these faster efforts on the trail. And I love the Run All Day Tee because it feels like you're barely wearing anything out there, which keeps you really, really cool on a hot day and doesn't feel like you're overwhelmed on a cold day as well. So it feels like you're not wearing anything that's holding you down. So I 100% suggest you try out John G's clothing. And if you're looking to test drive it, you can get 10% off your order when you use the code EverydayUltra at checkout at johng.com. That's spelled JANJI.com. Or you can go to the link in the show notes directly. Use code EverydayUltra to get 10% off your order. And if you're rocking John G in your next adventure, let me know and hope you give them a shot. Go to johng.com and use code EverydayUltra. All right, everybody, let's get right back into this episode here. Got to do that. And I told myself, I was like, you know what? I don't care how hard this pack goes. I don't care if like people are screaming out from the start. I'm not even going to chase anyone. I'm just going to run at a nice 3 RPE and just feel good and just see where I'm at. And that's what I'm going to do. And so then all of a sudden, starting line went off at 7 a.m. and we started going off and I started going off at a 3 RPE. Lo and behold, I was in first place like right off the bat. And I was like, okay, like this is great. Like awesome. I'm in first place. And there were two people right behind me and I can hear them because I wasn't wearing headphones at the time. And I could hear two people behind me just running, just their footsteps. Now, the way the race starts is it has a pretty decent climb coming right out from the gate. You climb all the way up to the saddle, and then it gets pretty rolly, and then it's kind of like a pretty big climb after that, then a descent, then a big climb again, and then a big descent, and then you're kind of like doing this like loop twice where it's like a lot of rolling hills with a relatively steeper climb throughout. So the total climbing, the course was noted as 3,200, but like my watch read 4,500, so it was actually a lot more climbing than was marked, which is kind of cool. And so, but I knew there was a big climb at the beginning, and I told myself, I was like, even if these guys behind me want to pass me, anything like that, they want to run up this hill. If I run up this hill and I feel like I'm breathing too hard, I'm going to pare it back a bit and I will hike if I need to. And I made that rule with myself because I knew the trail. I'd ran the trail before, so I knew it very, very well. I knew the climb. I've run up the climb before. I knew how it felt. And so I told myself, I was like, that's going to be the rule I set for myself. If I'm breathing too hard, no matter if I'm still holding first place, no matter if people are passing me, like I'm going to slow down and take it easy because I really want to run this to a 3 RPE to the best of my abilities. And I know, and like this is the thing that like had always had really just trumped me in the past in terms of, you know, taking it slow in the beginning is trusting myself enough to finish strong. And I think that's like the big thing that is really hard to nail down if you kind of haven't had that experience before, right? And so for me, I kind of had to sit down and just say like, you know what, I need to trust that I'm going to be able to finish strong because I'm going easier in the beginning. That's what I set out to do. And I'm going to go out and I'm going to do that. And we're going to make it happen. And so I started climbing up that hill and lo and behold, I felt actually pretty good. I was feeling pretty decent. My breathing was feeling pretty good. I was like, all right, great. Like we're going to run up this hill. It's going to be great. So I'm running up the hill and I hear one of the persons, you know, there's the two people behind me. I hear one of them just like drop immediately back. So I think he just started hiking. And then there was someone like right behind me. And so I didn't really think of it. I was like, you know what? It's fine. And we were kind of like going up the hills and he's running up the hills and he's like right on my heels. And I was like, great. Like, cool. I'll run with this guy. It doesn't sound like he's trying to make a move. Like we're probably just going to run neck and neck and just kind of go in there. Now it's funny because I've mentioned this on the podcast before. I generally don't like to talk in the beginning of an ultra. Usually later on in the ultra when I have like pacers or if I'm around people, I generally like to talk a little bit more. But like right at the start, I don't like to talk. And the reason why I don't like to talk is like number one, and this is just a me personal thing. Like I feel like it does expend a little bit of energy like when I'm talking and kind of having a conversation. And also too, I have a like when I get into conversations, I get very, very deep into it. And what happens is because I get deep in the conversation, I don't pay attention to nutrition, or I should say it's harder for me to pay attention to nutrition, harder for me to pay attention to pacing, harder for me to pay attention to effort. And so for that, I generally, if no one's chatting me up, I generally try and like keep quiet. So the guy behind me, and his name was Josiah, he wasn't chatting me up. We weren't saying anything. It was just stone cold quiet. And we were just trudging up this hill. And we were doing pretty well. Like both of us were pretty, pretty well, just kind of just chilling. And then we start running. He's still behind me. We get up top of the hill. Then we kind of get to this like rolly section that's like really a little bit downhill. And we start running together and he's running behind me. Now, what happens is as I'm running, I'm noticing, and by the way, I say this, I'm just recapping the situation. I'm being real. What's in my mind? This is when I get into kind of a competitive mode, I usually like to play the field. And listen, even if you're not trying to win a race and you're not trying to, you know, be quote unquote competitive out there, so to say, like, and when I say that, I mean like, you know, shooting for the top, which is totally 100% okay. I don't think that has to be a requirement to be competitive in the true sense of the sport. And what I mean by that is like, I think competition can be a big driver, even if you are, you know, someone who's not shooting for, you know, the podium or anything like that, because it can be fun. Like, think about it. It's always, think about the times when you've been in a race and maybe you pass people and you feel like you're stronger than the field around you. I know it sounds like, you know, could be kind of like cynical or things like that, but in the end of the day, like, it feels good. And you know what doesn't feel good? Doesn't feel good to get passed. Even if you're getting passed and like you're not racing in the race, like I've raced races before where, you know, I was not shooting for any other finish except for my own. And still in those moments when I get passed, like, I still get kind of pissed. And so, and that might just be a me thing, but I'm sure a lot of y'all can relate. So I share all this to say, like, use these kind of tactics and scenarios to help motivate you and to help, like, make the game a little bit more fun, right, out there. If you do have that competitive spirit out there. And, like, again, you know, you don't have to be shooting for the podium to have permission to be competitive. You don't even need permission to be competitive. You can just be competitive and it doesn't matter where you're at in the pack. Like, be competitive. It's fun. If that's your shtick, if you don't care at all and you're like, fuck it, I'm just going to out here to have fun. I don't give a shit who passes me or anything like that. That's great too. I'm not saying you have to be competitive, but I think a lot of times people don't be competitive, or they try and tell themselves, oh, I'm not competitive. But like, deep down inside, if that's like a motivator for you, like, use that to your advantage to push you through the tough times. Like, even when, like, I'll give you an example. When I was doing Black Canyon 100K last year, pretty much a year from today, more or less, I was obviously shooting for a golden ticket, and I was not even close. I was like 30th place or something like that. But I picked up my pacer, and what was awesome was, like, we passed like 12 people on that last section where he was pacing me, and I did not feel good. I felt terrible, but like, that was so motivating for me to keep running in a moment where I really, really wanted to slow down, and it motivated me. Even though I knew I wasn't going to get a golden ticket, even though I knew I wasn't going to get the result that I was shooting for, still being in a place where, honestly, at that point, my goal was like, I just want to finish. And I still was using that to get a good result. And so, like, that chasing kind of thing. So when I give these tactics on here, I don't want it to be written off automatically, like, I'm not competing, so, like, you know, this is not going to apply to me. I share this to say, like, you can be competitive for sure. And if it motivates you, use it to your advantage, because it will help you to get through the finish line. Because sometimes having that external motivation can actually happen. You know, funny enough, they did another study. And by the way, I'll go into these tactics, but I love, like, geeking out on these studies and stuff. But they did studies that showed athletes who are training by themselves versus athletes who are training with teammates, and then versus athletes who are training with competitors. And the athletes who are training with teammates and competitors far outweighed the performance of the people who are training alone. And so know that that does have a psychological advantage, where you can, whether it's a team as like a pacer, or whether it's like trying to pass someone, like, having that sort of mentality to use the energy of the field is really going to help you to get forward psychologically as well. Anyways, so where I got on that tangent was during this part, where I'm hearing the breathing of the person behind me, Josiah. I hear him breathing pretty, pretty heavily. And in that moment, like, for me, like, as a running coach, I know that if you're running at like a 2 to 3 RPE, you're probably not, you shouldn't be. You definitely shouldn't be breathing really, really heavy. And if you're running at 4 to 5 RPE, you shouldn't be breathing excessively heavy as well. Where you're kind of breathing heavy is where you're kind of pushing into like 6 to 7 RPE territory, where you're kind of a little bit of breathing like this, and it's harder to get the words out, right? And you're kind of going like that. I'm hearing that stuff. But I wasn't sure. I was like, hey, maybe he just breathes heavier than normal, anything like that. And so in that moment, I was like, you know what? I'm going to start talking to him. And Josiah, if you're listening to me, like, it's not because I'm like a bad guy or like, you know, a sociopath or anything like that. It's more so like, I just like to play the game out there. And so playing the game out there, I started chatting up the conversation. So I think I said something along the lines of like, it's just me and you out here. Like, just me and you out here, huh? That's what I said. And he goes like, yep, it's just me and you out here. And I was like, oh, there was another guy with us, but I think he kind of dropped off. And he's like, yeah, like, I don't know. Like, he was pretty good. And so I started assessing his like talking a little bit. And basically through the assessment of the talking, I realized, I was like, oh, he's working pretty hard. And in my eyes, like, just based on how he was talking, I was like, he's working harder than I am for sure. So I was like, all right, great. Like, I'm going to keep trying to, like, for me, just put, like, I wasn't pushing it, but I was like, I'm going to keep holding this. So like, maybe I can like drag it out and then ultimately make it really, really hard for him to kind of catch up, because like, there's only so much, so far that you can go at a 6 to 7 RP in an ultra, whereas like 2 to 3, I could like go all day and like feel really, really good. And so we started kind of chatting it up, and like, I'm holding the same intensity, and I'm just like trying to play the game of like trying to tire him out a little bit. And we're playing the game, and he's behind me. He's running, like, right behind me, and he stays, like, pretty behind me for a little bit. And then we kind of stopped talking because I was like, all right, like, now I just kind of want to focus and just want to keep it going on here because now I'm starting to eat. I'm starting to, like, take in the nutrition. The buzzing's coming off, and I was like, all right, I need to stick on this. I need to make this happen. First aid station was, like, 30 minutes in, and I went right by it because, like, I didn't need it because I had half a bottle of water left. I had the emergency flask too that I could have used, and I had like enough nutrition. So for me, I just blew right past it. And then Josiah behind me blew right past it as well. And we're running neck and neck at this point. Now we're not really saying to each other. We're kind of being quiet again. And I'm just like focusing on nutrition. I'm just, again, going pretty easy at this point. Now, when we're going into this point too, what is happening is all of a sudden I'm noticing like my shoes are just getting heavier and heavier. And I'm like, what the heck? And as I'm like looking down, I just see like this mud just like caked on my feet, just absolutely caked. Now, what had happened is like it poured the night before in Arizona, and you're running through these like open fields and with like this like thicker kind of dirt, and it's just straight mud out there. So like I'm feeling like I'm running with like ankle weights out there and just running, and it's like super slippery. As I'm looking down now, I can see like it's very slippery kind of stuff, and I just keep telling myself, you know, I was like, no factor. I was like, it's muddy, like, whatever. You can still run. Sure, the shoes are a little heavier, but you can still run. You're still feeling good. So, like, not a problem. Whatever. Just run like normal. And I think that's a good thing that I've been, like, trying to tell myself, like, when, like, terrain or conditions, like, aren't there, it's like, hey, like, you know, that's okay. Like, run like normal. Even if the running is a little bit impacted, like, run like normal. See what happens. And I just kind of, like, went through it. I didn't even think about it, which was really interesting because, like, a lot of times in training runs, I do get a little bit hesitant on, like, slicker terrain or mud or things like that because I don't want to slip. But in this moment, I felt this kind of, like, peace with it. I was, like, and this trust in myself and this, like, oh, yeah, like, I can do this. Like, this is going to be good. And I had this, like, inner trust and told myself, yeah, just run like normal. Don't worry. No factor. Let's just keep on going. And so we're running, and it's just, like, incredibly muddy. Like, there's mud splashed over all my calves. Like, there's mud everywhere. It's just, like, there's water, and it's, my feet are wet. But I was like, I don't care. I'm just going to keep on running. Now, at this point, like, now we're starting to get to a point where we're going up this, like, pretty gradual climb. And we're going up this pretty gradual climb, and I notice, like, Josiah's, like, slowly, like, his footsteps are getting quieter and quieter, and I know he's going back. Now, for me, I don't want to turn around because what I've kind of realized is, and this is more so realizing not just from me, but like from being in a field competing, is when I see someone turn around, that means they're concerned with where the person is behind him. And so for me, I was like, I'm not going to send that signal. Like, I'm not concerned either in the first place. I'm just going to keep straight and just keep trudging on, making sure I'm not slipping on the mud. Cause that was the other thing too. I was like, I don't want to like turn my head. And then all of a sudden, like, there's like, it's muddy rock. And then I just like totally biff it. And so I was like, you know what, I'm not going to send the signal. I'm just going to keep running, and I'm just going to keep running pretty strong because now I want to kind of build the lead because I can see the gap going. So on these climbs, like, I'm just trying to build the gap as much as possible, stay forward. And what was super cool is, like, this course is freaking beautiful at this part. And, like, now we're getting on trails that I had never been on before, and it's just, like, opens up this sweeping view of like this like really green beautiful valley with all these mountains and all these saguaro cactuses, and the sun was coming up, and I was like, I remember audibly being like, I was like, oh my gosh. And I think that's always something I've made a point in a lot of these ultras is, no matter like how in the moment, or I shouldn't say, I want to say it's like you're in the moment but you're not in the moment, and I should say in the zone, right? Because like when you're in the zone, and that's where I was kind of at this point. I was in that flow state, in that zone where it's like you almost check out of what you're doing in the moment, but at the same time, you're also present. And it's like this feeling of just ease, and but also effort. It's this feeling of precision, but also freeform. And it's this place that you kind of go to where everything just feels right. But sometimes when you're in that zone, what I've kind of noticed is because you're so deep in the zone that sometimes you can miss the beautiful landscape around you. And like, I've made that a point to not do that in races because I've known very early on into my ultra running career, when I did like my first 50K and first 50 mile and things like that, that I didn't really care about the views. I was just more so carried about like just being in the zone. And a lot of the things that I do love about trail running, which most people love in itself, is you know, the beautiful terrain that we're around. So like, I remember just like taking it in, just looking it through and just being like, wow, like this is amazing. Like I get to do that. And even though at this point, like I was climbing and like, you know, I can feel a little bit more effort, but I was like, you know what? Like, this is beautiful. This is amazing. And like, that gave me energy out there just to be so excited, even though I was caked in mud, even though like, you know, I was running up this hill, like it was just freaking great. Then all of a sudden we get on the top of the hill and there's this like little downhill section. And as I'm going down the downhill, all of a sudden I just hear this like thumping, like really hard behind me. And I was like, oh my God, is this like Josiah? Is this a new person? Like, I have no idea. But like, I recognize like immediately, as soon as he like gets right behind me, he starts running my pace. And then I realized, I was like, by the breathing, I was like, oh, it's Josiah. So he's back here with me. I was like, and in my head, I'm like, I can't believe I can't shake this guy. I was like, but you know what? I'm not trying to turn on the jets yet. I was like, because my plan was to turn on the jets around mile 15, like right at the halfway point. And that's when I knew I was going to turn it on. At this point, we're at like mile 10. And so I was like, you know what? I'm still saving in the tank. Like, even though I can't shake him. And in my head, I was kind of getting a little frustrated. I was like, I can't believe I haven't shaken him by now. But I was like, you know what? It's okay. Like, still working pretty hard. You can shake him at a point. You can get it done. And so we start running. And again, we're not saying each other. And then we get to the Spur Cross aid station, which the way the course is laid out is you start and then you go all the way out to Spur Cross. And then you actually go back. You do a little bit of an out and back. And then you start a loop, which is called like the Gojon Trail. You start that loop and then you come down like two other trails, come to the start finish. You go back out the same way we came in, but except going out to Spur Cross, you finish the Gojon loop and basically do like that loop again. And then you finish the course. So we're at the point now where we're going to the out and back and we're coming back. And so we get into that aid station. And as I get in the aid station, I'm there, I'm filling up my water bottles, I'm taking some food and eating whatever they have over there, watermelon, potato chips, like all those kind of things, just eating those. And then all of a sudden Josiah comes in and he's like, hey, like, great job, Joan. I'm like, hey, great job, man. Like, pat him on the back. Cause like, that's the thing too. It's like, even when you're competing, like, you can still like, you know, root for the other people. Like, you can still like, you know, motivate them. And I think that's like, for me, like, you know, even though I can be a very, like, and I know this, like, I can be very callous when it comes to like competing, I still like want I want to cheer on the people. Like, I don't want to be a dick out there. Like, I don't want to be a jerk. And so, that was like the one thing on there as well. And then I left that aid station and I told myself, cause I left like right before Josiah, and I said, you know what? Like, we're at mile 13. I told myself I was going to kick it on 15. Like, you know, I'm out before he is. I'm going to put on a gap. And like, right out of this aid station, you know, like, cause it was a downhill into the aid station, you just like do this like pretty big climb coming out. And I was like, you know what? Like, yeah, I'm going to kick it. I'm going to kick it at this point. Like, well, why not? So I start kicking it up. Now I'm like running like 4 to 5 RPE at this point. I'm running like 4 to 5 RPE and I'm like just trying to gap. And in my head, all I can think about is, you know, our good friend Sally McRae is saying like, pass, gap, and bury. I was like, you know what? Now we're just going to try and bury him. Like, we got the gap on him. We're going to try and bury him now. And I just remember just like going hard and digging deep and coming up. Now this is super cool because at this point, now you're getting like the out and back. So you're seeing the other 50K runners come in. And I love this. And so one of the things that I learned this from Chad Wright when I had him on the podcast, and I thought it was awesome. He was saying like, whenever he's feeling bad in an ultra, and by the way, I wasn't feeling bad at this point, but I knew this would still help. He's saying whenever he feels bad in an ultra, he will go ahead and root anyone on who's passing him or who's, you know, on the course or anything like that. Because like, when it's a paradox in ultras, it's like, when you give energy, you get it back. And so like, when you cheer people on, like, I've always felt that I get like good energy from it. So every person that was coming by, I was cheering them on. I was like, yeah, like, way to go. I saw Kelly over there. I gave her a high five like coming in. I saw my friend Melina. I saw like all these people just running in. I saw my friend Megan Slavin, who won the 25K, which was awesome to see, and or second place in the 25K. Elsa McDonald won the 25K, still an amazing effort. It was just awesome. And so just seeing all those people just was like giving me this like, you know, this high that was great. But was interesting, like, now I'm like kicking up the intensity and we're kind of climbing up a little bit and the sun is actually getting a little bit out. So all these factors, I start to get like my first like twinge of discomfort, I call it. I wasn't like feeling in a low point, but I started to get this first like twinge of discomfort. And granted, we're only at like mile 14 or 15 at this point, like right around the point where I'm going to start to kick it. And I was like, you know what? Like, this is fine. This is good. This is okay. Like, I kind of like in that moment, like, imagined like the guy, like that meme of that dog who's like in the place that has like flames all around him. And he's like, this is fine. That's kind of like what I was telling myself. I was like, this is fine. It's okay. Like, you're climbing, you're pushing a little bit more. The sun's coming out. Like, it's okay. Like, don't worry. Don't freak out. Like, it's okay. Like, acknowledging it, but also saying, like, you know, it's all right. Like, you're not supposed to feel good. It's okay. Like, it's an ultra marathon. Like, kind of keep going from there. And so, but anyways, right, I didn't want to, I was almost, because I know in the past, like, where that have happened, like, you know, our brain can kind of be like, oh, here we go. But I told myself, I was like, nope, like, it's okay. It's all right, fine. Like, don't worry about this. It will turn around. And that was the big thing that I kind of always have held on to whenever I feel crappy in an ultra is like, and it's a great, great mantra that I learned from Tim Tollefson, which is it never always gets worse. It never always gets worse. And I tell myself that all the time. Like when I'm feeling bad, like a lot of the times, like why our brain like starts to freak out like that is because they think it's going to be just this like downward spiral, like just keep on going. But there, especially in this one, there's been times where like you feel the twinge of discomfort, but then it ends up going away because guess what? When I told myself that, I said, hey, it's fine. Doesn't always get worse. It's going to get better. It's all good. And before you know it, like once we were done with the climb, we were going downhill on a flat road. I felt freaking great. I was like, oh man, like I feel great. I feel awesome. This is great. And I don't know where I'm at in the lead at this point, but like in my head, I was like, okay, we're at mile 15. It's time to kick it, baby. Like we are going to gap and we're going to take this win and I'm not going to get past and I'm going to go ahead and I'm just going to rock this. So I'm running this and then now I'm running at like a true 5 RPE, like even on the flats and everything like that. And I'm running like a true 5 RPE and I was like, all right, this is going to be good. And I'm still feeling like pretty, pretty good at this point. And, but like, I also like, I'm like, okay, I want to like just see where Josiah is. Cause like I hadn't looked back when I was at that part where I was in that real Barry mode. I hadn't looked back once. And so I was like, all right, I want to look back. I'm confident he's not behind me because if he sees me look back, then that's not a good sign. But I'm going to take the gamble at this point because I've been running pretty hard. And so I turned my head around and the where I turned my head around, you can like see the trail for like at least a mile and a half, I would say like down. Or I would say, I don't know, that might be exaggerating, but you could see a pretty far way. And I turned my head and Josiah was wearing a yellow sweatshirt and I was like looking for it. I was like, yellow sweatshirt. And I was like, couldn't see it. And I was like, great, awesome. Like, I think I made up a lot of time, which was awesome. And so, but at that point, I recognized that in my head, like I recognized that in my head saying like, oh, like you have a comfortable lead. And I was like, no, don't agree to that. Just be like, you know what? Like, let's keep running hard. That's not an excuse for me to keep running easy. Like, let's keep running hard. You said you wanted to run hard. Let's fucking run hard and let's do it. And so I start running hard and starting, you know, really just feeling good out there, feeling great. Now at this point, I think my average pace, I want to say is somewhere around like 8:20. Now granted, like I'd done most of the climbing at this point too, so it's still pretty fast. I think like the grade adjusted pace, if I'm looking at Strava, probably should have had this pulled up ready to access early on, but we'll pull this up in the meantime. Little live Strava pull here. So like my grade adjusted pace at this point was pretty much like mid sevens. And yeah. And then so now we're kind of like going on this pace. And yeah, I'm running like 8:15, 8:14. Stop at an aid station, refill, get food, everything like that. But then I just keep kind of hucking it from there. Now around mile 20, there's like an aid station. And it's called the Gojon Aid Station. I remember stopping there and I was also filling up and grabbing my stuff and saw someone who was like, oh, I love your podcast, which by the way, like, if you're listening to this, man, appreciate you. Appreciate all the volunteers at Gojon Aid Station. All the volunteers in every aid station. Appreciate you a ton. That was just really cool to just see that midway through. But he came in, he's like, yo, you're first male, right? And I was like, I hope so. And in my head, I was like, okay, like, I know that I'm at this aid station. If Josiah is chasing me, he's probably going to ask like where I'm at. Like, and so I was like, I need to get out. I just need to get in, get out. And so that's what I did. I got in and got out. And it was kind of at this point, like where I started to feel a little hot and I was feeling a little hot because like I was wearing that long sleeve shirt and like now I was feeling hot, but luckily I was only like a few miles away from the start finish where my drop bag was. And I knew I was going to be able to strip right out of there. So I was like, okay. And then this is something that I always suggest to anyone in any race when they're going into an aid station, is you figure out and you do like a mental check of like what you need to do in the aid stations at the specific points. Like, what do you need to grab? What do you need to do? And like make that plan, like, you know, right before you're about to get in. When I say like right before, you know, it could be anywhere between like a quarter of a mile to a half a mile or anything like that, right? And so in my head, I was like, okay, I'm going to go to the start finish. I'm going to take off my shirt. I'm going to eat some watermelon. In my head, I was like, you know what? I'm going to actually ditch the emergency saw flask in the back because I was sipping it and it was pretty much almost done. And I was like, I just want to like ditch that because I don't want to carry extra stuff around. And I'm just going to go out there and run. And in my head, I was like, okay, like, and I had already taken all of the nutrition that I had in my naked belt at the time. And the only last final loop was like a last like seven mile loop. And in my head, I was like, okay, like, do I take extra nutrition or like, do I take the extra nutrition? I don't know. Like, and I was like, meh, like 7 miles, like I can pretty much hammer that for like 6-7 RPE and like not worry about it. Like, I don't have to bring it. I think I'm good. Like, cause I just like wanted to get in and out of the aid station as efficiently as possible. And I had a drop bag there. And like, I was like, you know, I just want to drop the shirt, drop the handheld, and then eat what I can at that aid station and then just get in and out. And so I came in and, I was like, okay, like go in, get the drop bag, get the watermelon. Saw Kristen, who listens to my podcast, and you know, we've gone back and forth on Instagram a few times. So Kristen, awesome, thank you so much for all your help out there. But I was like, you know what, I gotta be in, I gotta be out. And like, this is also a time too, like where everybody's watching, and you got the race director there. It's like the start finish, and there is like one tactic that I've always done. It's like when you're in a high visibility area, you want to look as fresh as possible. So I try to look as fresh as possible, and you know, I think I did. I think it looked kind of fresh, but I was definitely taking a little bit more of my time out there just because like I wanted to make sure that I had everything. And I went out for the run on there too. Now, what I realized too, I was like, oh, I got to do that climb again. And so I was like, okay. And I'm running, I'm ditching the shirt, I'm feeling decent. And then I was like, you know what, right before the climb, what I did to kind of like save my quads, because like I knew like my, I wouldn't say I was feeling sore, but I was definitely feeling like a little fatigued. Like, you know, you're out there for 20, you know, at that point, I think it was, what was it, mile 20, looking at the splits here exactly, it was like mile 24-ish, yeah, somewhere around there, yeah, mile 24, and, yeah, because that's like the big one in there, so like mile 24, and I was like, okay, like, you know, you ran 24 miles, like, legs are going to be a little fatigued, you're like, okay, like, it's okay, like no worries. And I remember pulling out like a bottle of like Play On Relief, and I sprayed it on my quads because I was like, "All right, we're gonna go up this hill, and we're gonna mash it. We're gonna do great." And I start like going up the hill, and like immediately, like all of a sudden, for some reason, like my breathing just got like really heavy, and yeah, I just felt like it was a lot heavier than normal. And I was like, you know what? You still got like 7 miles to go. And I don't know how far back the guy was behind me. Oh, actually, no. I got the word from Aaron, who was the race director at the time. He told me at the start finish, I said, how far back is he? He said, oh, he's about like 4 or 5 minutes back. And I was like, oh, okay. So I was like, 4 or 5 minutes, like that's a pretty solid lead, like in a 50K. But I was like, you know what? Like, that's still like not cutting it. Like, again, like don't rest on the laurels is basically what I was saying there. And so I knew that at that moment, I still had to push as much as possible. But when I was going up those climbs, that was really where I first hit my low point in the race. And when I was going up that climb, I noticed that my breathing was way heavier than it was when I first went up it earlier, and a little heavier than my liking. And I knew that there's still, even though there's only like 6-7 miles to go, I knew that like with someone 5 miles behind me, or sorry, not 5 miles, 5 minutes behind me, that, you know, if I continued to, or if I should say, if I put myself in a position where I pushed a little too early, and then let's just say on those last few miles, which were all downhill, that I just didn't have enough in the tank to really push it, then this guy could potentially catch me. So for me, I made a risky decision, but ended up paying off. But I made a risky decision. I said, you know what? I'm going to power hike up this hill right here, even though, you know, we're 6 and 7, you know, miles away from the finish line. Like, I'm actually going to power hike this one. So I went through and I power hiked it, and I just focused on like moving as efficiently as possible uphill. And I remember telling myself, I was like, actually, this is good Coco Donut training, because you're working on power hiking, you know, at a, you know, even though you're in a 50K and you're going a little faster, I was like, you know what, this is good. Like, you know, kind of pushing it on there as well. And, I got to the, I should say, before I even got to the top of the hill, as I'm power hiking through this, I kind of go through this epiphany in my head. And that epiphany was like, okay, I'm not feeling great right now. And you know what? Like this last section here, like I have, you know, 6 miles left to go. I just done a lot of like the big climbs. Like the rest was pretty rolling climbs. Like they were still climbing, but it's very, very rolling. But I said, you know what? Like if I'm going to push really hard in these last like 6 miles, like it's going to absolutely suck. It's going to hurt. It's going to really push my limits. And this could be very good mental training for Cocodona. Like, because even though it's going to be a different kind of suffering, because Cocodona is very much like the long, you know, you're out there for a long time, you're sleep deprived. It's like a whole different type of exhaustion than, you know, kind of redlining yourself into, you know, redlining yourself into exhaustion, right? It's a different thing. But I told myself, I was like, you know what? Like, this is a tune-up race for Cocodona. Let's practice the art of suffering. And I remember getting to the top of the hill, and as soon as I like made that thing to say, like, let's practice the art of suffering. And this is another way, by the way, where a tune-up race that you're running a little bit faster than you would your target race can actually serve you in your longer race. It's because you are pushing a little bit harder, and you're, even though you're hitting a different level of suffering by the level that you are pushing harder, you are still going into a place where you're going to have to be a sentinel in your mind. You're going to have to play the mind games. You're going to have to ultimately battle the demons that are coming up to keep you going forward. And that's going to be the same thing in your target race. So therefore, if you are in that moment, even though you are kind of in a different mode of suffering, you're still working on building that mental resilience muscle. And that was kind of like the click that I had in the moment that just said, you know what? Cut this power hiking shit. Let's rock this. Let's freaking do this. And I remember as soon as I did that, like, as soon as I kind of, like, made that decision in my head, it was, like, really serendipitous, but, like, so I was listening to music at the time, which, by the way, I didn't listen to any music for the first, you know, 24 miles. I didn't listen to any music. I just kind of kept it there, and I've been using this strategy now where it's, like, I listen to music later in a race because it's kind of, like, super fuel, because if you just kind of, I've found that if I just listen to music, like, straight off the bat in a race, I kind of get, like, it kind of loses its effectiveness, like, even if, you know, you hit that song that, like, really, really pushes. So for me, I was like, you know what, I gotta push. And so I'm putting in some music, and I was putting in some stuff. And so I was listening to some music. As soon as I get to the top of this climb, when I kind of make this decision that, like, I'm going to push, I'm going to suffer, and I'm going to push through it, this one song came on that, like, I mean, every time I hear it, I feel like I'm going to run through a brick wall. And it's a very, very, very intense song. So by the way, if you, like, look it up and listen to it, just know that, like, it's an intense song, but it gets me going. And it's called Surfacing by Slipknot. And it's got this, like, amazing kind of, like, just build up, like, where it's just, like, kind of, like, you know, first it starts with, like, this, like, screeching guitar, and then all of a sudden, like, a heavier guitar comes in, and then the drums come in, and then, like, you got, like, the DJ tables kind of, like, building it all up. And, like, as this thing's building up, I just remember just, like, getting so amped, like, so fired up. And then, like, there's a part in the song where it just, like, absolutely drops. And then the moment that it does drop in the song, I just remember, like, absolutely, like, screaming, like, out loud, like, just kind of, like, let's go, or something like that. I don't remember exactly, but, like, I remember, like, channeling out something just super powerful, and I just remember just, like, ripping it on the downhill. And at that moment, I was like, you know what, I'm just gonna go as hard as I can and just see what happens, and I'm just going to push. And in that entire kind of time, I was just leaning into just the skills of what it's like to be in this mode of just suffering and then just to keep going. And it was, I mean, yeah, it definitely, like, was hard. Like, it really, really was hard. But in the end of the day, like, I think I had, in that moment, I'd gone through so many different experiences, such as, you know, doing Javelina 100 twice and then doing 300 milers and, you know, going through a lot of these races where maybe it didn't go the way that it did, but I'm carrying on through the end. And in that moment, like, I kind of had, like, full trust in myself that I was like, yeah, this is going to suck for about 6 miles, but I know I can do it. And that's, like, a really, really important point when it comes to running, is, like, you have to use those prior experiences that you have shown yourself in the middle of ultras that you can push through, and you have to bring those up into the forefront when you're in another race so you can prove to yourself that you can get through it. And because it's real confidence. I talk about that all the time. It's like stacking those undeniable, like, receipts and those proof, like, all that proof that you can do what you say you're going to do. And in that moment, I just really just had all these things just kind of go through my head. And in my head, I was like, you know what, like, the faster you go, the quicker you finish, which is one of my mantras that is, like, always to the forefront when I, like, really just want to get through it as soon as possible. So I just remember just going as hard as I possibly could to really, you know, just kind of run. Now, I wasn't, like, sprinting, like, all out sprints, because, like, I knew that there was still at this point like 5 miles to go. And so I still wanted to be smart in it, but I was like going as fast as I sustainably could in the moment while putting it. And I was breathing heavy. I was feeling a little hot. Like I was definitely feeling a little tired out there because I didn't take caffeine midway through, which like I usually do. And yeah, I was just like, you know what? I'm just going to go through and rock it. And I started to feel like a little bit bonky. And like, I realized that I felt a little bit bonky because I didn't bring enough calories on that last loop. Because I thought, I was like, you know what? 7 miles, like probably going to be okay. But what I kind of miscalculated on my end was like, I saw the weather forecast. I thought it was going to be super cloudy. It was a little bit, warmer than like probably what the temperature was just because the sun was out. And I think I was sweating a little bit more, coupled by the fact that I was really, really pushing it on the last thing. I think my body just needed a little bit more calories. But I told myself, I was like, you know what? It doesn't matter. Like if I can run myself into the ground right now and I just want to do this. And what matters to me right now is getting this win and finishing this race strong. And I'm going to go ahead and do it. And I remember getting on top of the last climb. And like, again, it was like, you know, a lot of rolling climbs. I remember getting on top of the last climb. And I remember just saying like, you know, I'm just going to bring it home. And I'm going to run strong. And I remember like, you know, you get a lot of these like visions when you kind of get into these ultras, right? And like one of the visions that I vividly remember was at Javelina earlier this year, a few months ago, which was last year, so to say. And I remember being on the fourth loop. So I was about to go out the fifth loop. And as I'm running relatively slow, out of Javelina 100, I see Jonathan Ray, who's on his fifth lap, about to finish the race, and he's clipping like sub 7 minute miles, like a mile 98. And I just remember like seeing him, and I remember seeing him pass me. And I remember seeing him pass me, and in the moment, just I didn't say it out loud. I had my pacer Nico there, but I remember just saying to myself, I was like, I want to finish an ultra strong like that. Like that is how you finish an ultra strong. And in that moment, I was like, you know what? Like, that's what we're going to do. And I just remember just like pushing and just, you know, wanting to finish this strong. And even though like I kept looking back because I kept like wanting to see if there was someone behind me, and I didn't see anyone for like miles and miles. And so like I knew like I had the win in the bag, and I was like, you know what? I'm just going to just keep on running and just going to finish strong. And even though like, you know, I was a little bonky, even though I was kind of breathing heavy, even though like, you know, I did feel like I was getting a little tired, I was like, you know what? Like we're going to get this done. And I remember running down, and I remember here comes your 50K champion, Joe Corcione, seeing the finish line. And I, you know, it was interesting because like at first in my head, I was like, oh, do I do something at the finish line? Do I like put my hand up? Do I like, you know, celebrate? Like, what do I do? And then I was like, you know what? I'm just gonna run it in, and I'm gonna like internalize. I'm gonna give a little fist pump, like a little Tiger Woods fist pump. And then I'm just gonna internalize it and just be like, you know what? Like, that was great. Because like, you know, I didn't want to make a huge spectacle about it in that moment, because it wasn't like, yes, I love that I won this race and it's super, super cool. But like this one was like more, I know it's like more special to me than anyone else. And it's like, you know, I'm going to celebrate this internally. And I don't know, it was like a very weird thing, because I'm usually a very external kind of celebrator, like, you know, let's go kind of person, like getting fired up. But there was something about like just crossing that finish line and just like being like, yes, like this is freaking awesome. And I remember crossing that finish line and hitting that watch. And I remember putting my hands on my legs and just sitting there and just like putting it in and be like, wow, I was like actually happy with that race. And that's a good feeling. Like, it's a good feeling. It's a good feeling even like when you don't, you know, win a race, but like you have a good result. Like I said before, like to run a race that you are genuinely proud of is great. And, you know, the interesting thing too is like when I crossed the finish line, I didn't feel like I was like spent and then I gave it all. If I'm being honest, I do feel like I probably could have gone like more, and I feel like there was a little bit left in the tank, which is interesting because I'm still trying to kind of figure out like the piece between like, you know, when do you kind of like how do you, especially for a 50K, like when is the point when you really start kicking it a little harder? And so like, you know, it's an interesting kind of thing to do, because sometimes you actually might run a suboptimal race if you're trying a negative split, because you do leave a little bit of stuff on the table, right? Conversely, though, if you run it very aggressively, then you run the risk of like severely positive splitting if you can't hold on. So like it was interesting because like I did truly feel like I could keep going. I wasn't sore really at all. I mean, I was definitely tired. My legs definitely felt a little bit stiff, but like I didn't feel like demolished by like any means. And that was like kind of cool too, because it was like, oh, like I'm probably could have like pushed a little bit more in the tank, which like I'm stoked about, because like I thought it was like a result that I was pretty, you know, happy with. And I was like, wow, like I'm wondering like what else I can do and like where I'm kind of at. And it was a cool also thing to realize. It was like, hey, like I did this and I got the win, even though it was on like my honeymoon and, you know, had the wedding the week before this, which was awesome to see. And so it was just a cool, cool lesson in just, you know, training and just learning about myself and just learning about, you know, what it's like to have, you know, that great result like that, which, you know, I've had before in the past that I've really enjoyed. And so it was just an awesome, awesome thing. So all those things internalized and, you know, felt great and got to see my wife and got to see my friends like Megan Slavin and Brian Slavin over there at the end. My friend David, who is waiting for his wife, Melina. And it was just super, super cool just to see everybody. And I even saw, got to check in on one of my clients who ran the race. So Kelly was out there running, not the Kelly that I mentioned earlier, but, Kelly, my client who I saw earlier in the race too, she was out there and she did the 50K. And, I heard we were texting throughout and, you know, she was saying like, oh, like, you know, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to do it and I'm going to finish this thing. And I just remember I was just so excited to hear that and was just really, really stoked that she was doing super, super well out there. So, it was really, really rad. And so it was a cool experience just to lean in the community. I'm really grateful for the win, but most importantly, I'm so grateful for, you know, having a race that I was actually super, super stoked about, which was, you know, incredibly amazing. So really, really stoked about that. All right, now I want to answer some questions that I got in from the listeners of the podcast, which I'm pulling up to see which ones I haven't addressed yet, which was super, super cool. Let's see, pulling it up. Again, I should have these things pre-pulled up before, but, you know, we're doing it live here. We're doing these things live, so why can't I pull this up? Where am I looking for it? Trying not to get dead air here. Okay, cool. So the first question here is, did you do a proper taper for this race and what's recovery look like for you post race? So, I kind of did a taper, I guess. If you count like the honeymoon as like a taper with like no running. Right. My situation is kind of interesting where the fact that I, you know, had my honeymoon and I, you know, only ran two times during that time. And then, when I came back, I did like one steady state interval workout on Tuesday, and then I basically just did shorter, easy runs from Wednesday to Friday. Nothing too crazy. In essence, if you look at the volume, it was kind of designed as a taper, but like if I were to go into this race, just normally throughout training, like if I had like a normal schedule, I probably wouldn't have done a full blown taper given that it was a tune-up race. I truly believe like you don't have to taper for tune-up races. But if you really want to like go for like a really, really like great result, then it would have taper. Like then I would do a taper for sure. For this one though, I probably would have done, you know, a tip, like usually I like to do a 2-week taper. And for this one, I probably, if I had like a normal schedule, like without the wedding and the honeymoon, I probably would have done, you know, almost like a 1-week kind of taper, but like it's more so like a deload week. So that's generally how I would approach it, because like I still didn't want to lose out on like the extra kind of week of training that I can build into Cocodona, which would be great. And then recovery post race. So right now it is Tuesday, February 6th. I haven't ran since. Mostly because I just kind of wanted to give my body just a little bit of a reset just from everything. So but what I have been doing, I have been going on walks, which is something that I'm going to be doing a lot more. Like I used to with rest days just kind of not do much, but like now I'm starting to like walk around a lot more, because as I'm looking at the research, like research does show that moving around does help to aid recovery a lot more than just sitting around and doing nothing. So like yesterday I went through a hike, today I went on a little walk in the morning, and then I'll probably start running tomorrow, which would be Wednesday. So it'll be like a few days after the race, I'll start running after that as well. and then just getting kind of back on track on there as well. The other thing I'm doing, I'm eating and drinking a lot of water, not eating water, but eating a lot of food and drinking a lot of water because, you know, in these kind of events, you do deplete a lot of calories and you do lose a lot of hydration. So I'm making sure to eat as clean as possible, you know, from the race as well, which is something that's really helpful. And then I'm trying to get as much sleep as I possibly can, just because, like, the way that I always see it is, like, in recovery periods, you're usually running less, and usually I substitute that time running with sleeping, because sleep is the king when it comes to recovery. So, and I feel fine. Like, I don't feel sore. I don't feel tired. I don't feel anything like that, but I just want to make sure that I'm not, like, launching back into it. And then plus I'm still kind of playing a little bit of catch up on some stuff, you know, from the honeymoon and being out. And I think it's a great time, like, in these rest periods to, like, work on other priorities as well. So that's kind of what I'm doing recovery post-race, and also using Play On Relief Spray too, which is a great, great tool to have. And I've been using that, and yeah, it's just been absolutely incredible. So it's like a spray that you spray on your legs, and basically it goes deep into the muscles and it removes soreness. So although I wasn't sore, you know, after the race, it still helps too, just in case, because, you know, soreness can pop up, and maybe I haven't been sore just because of that, so who knows. So that's what I'm doing recovery post-race. Let's see, another question here. A lot of questions about fueling and hydration, which I covered in here pretty extensively, so that's all covered. Next one, what was your racing strategy that aligned with checking your fitness? Yeah, so good question. So aligned with checking the fitness really just comes around wanting to see what I can do in a 50K effort, like racing a 50K as if it was a 50K, right? And kind of comparing it to my prior 50K efforts. So I think the last time I ran like an official 50K was Hangover 50K in 2022. The last one I did was Crown King Scramble. So Crown King Scramble, and that has a lot more climbing. It has like 6,000 feet of climbing. And then, so it's kind of interesting, but like I look at like the grade adjusted pace in Strava to kind of like, you know, normalize those things. And if I look at that, the grade adjusted pace was 7:58 for that one. And then for this one, the grade adjusted pace was 8:02. So that was super cool, which, by the way, I didn't mention my official time on here. My official time was 4 hours and 36 minutes, which was 8:55 average pace. So yeah, I know I didn't mention that, but I'm going to mention that here. But I like to compare, like, to see how fit I was compared to that. Now, 8:02 versus 7:58, I'm happy with that, and I'm not saying it's, like, lesser. Where I would put the asterisk on, I guess this one, and I hate putting asterisks on things, but, like, where I kind of come into consideration was, like, this one was definitely more technical and a lot more muddy, so, like, I had to be relatively a little bit more careful on this one, whereas Crown King, the entire thing was, like, super runnable. So, I do think, like, the technicality played into a little bit of the factor. So if I'm matching up, like, fitness against fitness, plus when I did Crown King, I had more leeway of training, because I was training for Canes 100K, and I put in, you know, one of the best training blocks in my eyes at Black Canyon 100K, for Black Canyon 100K earlier that year. And so I think, like, fitness wise, like, I'm, like, using a shorter run map to get to where I am now versus, like, where I was measuring it at a Crown King last year. Like, that to me is, like, a good sign of, like, you know, rocking fitness. So that's kind of how I compare the fitness, is, like, that grade adjusted pace, like, versus, like, my most recent 50K, which was inherently, like, 13 months ago. So that's kind of how I would check the fitness on there. Another question, does winning the race make you want to run more smaller local races to win? Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, for me, I really want to compete high level in the sports. And if I'm being honest with myself, if I just wanted to, like, win these, like, you know, local races like this one and just keep winning those, like, I mean, yeah, it's awesome. Like, it's cool to win. Like, don't get me wrong, but, like, I also know, like, that, you know, this race is obviously very different than, like, a Javelina 100. It's way less competitive than a Javelina 100. It's way less competitive than a Black Canyon. And, like, I really, really want to, like, compete at those races. And that's really where I want to, like, get good results. I do think these ones are good, though, to, like, kind of build some confidence, especially because, like, last year I pretty much swung the fences at, like, all these big races. And so I think it's good to have, like, you know, a race where you can just kind of go in and have a little bit of a confidence booster. But, like, doing this doesn't, like, make me inclined to run smaller races. Yeah, I'm definitely still just as stoked to do the big races. Like, I'm stoked for Crokinona. I'm stoked for Istria. I'm stoked for Javelina. I'm stoked for Ouray 100. Like, I'm just beyond stoked for, like, these, like, bigger kind of races, just because there's usually a lot more competition out there. And I like the increased competition for sure. I don't think it makes me want to run them more, but, like, I think it also just shows, like, the value of them for sure. But at least I know, like, you know, I if I'm just being honest, like, treating the win here is not even close to the same as, like, a win at Javelina 100 or, like, a win at Black Canyon. So it's, like, I do want, like, to continue to get solid results at those kind of events. Like, honestly, like, I'd be much more stoked at, like, a fifth place finish at, like, a Javelina 100, like, way more stoked than, like, a first place finish at, like, a local race any day. So, yeah, I'm definitely stoked to get back to the competition for sure. So next question, what was your high and low from the race and what did you learn from them? I think covered that a lot. I mean, I covered, like, the lows. I think the high for me was just, like, that last kind of moment or the last kind of, you know, miles of the race and just, like, running hard and, like, hanging on to that and, like, fully trusting myself. I think that's, like, the big thing is, like, when you fully trust yourself, like, not just in an ultra, but in life, like, that's, like, where you can really, really gain a lot of self-confidence and a lot of self-belief in yourself. And I think that was a cool high from the race. And what did I learn from that? I mean, I learned that, like, you know, self-belief is the most important mental thing out there. It's more important than any other mental trick. It's more important than, you know, anything that you can do from, like, a mindset perspective out there. And that's, like, the big thing that helped me to continue to keep moving. Again, not just the win, it's just keep moving. And as you notice, like, I'm more so just talking about, like, how I felt about the my result as opposed to, like, the win itself. And I think that's the big thing too. So, and then lows from the race, I covered that and what I learned from that. Looking at some other questions on here. So biggest challenge going into the race and throughout, I kind of talk about, like, the one throughout was just kind of, like, the, you know, it was just, like, normal ultra challenges. Like, I don't think I had, like, any, like, severe, like, oh shit kind of moments. It was more just like, this is kind of, like, typical pain. And, like, this is what I'm here for. I guess going, the biggest challenge going into it was definitely, you know, knowing that the week before I had my honeymoon, like, before, like, you know, it's one of those things where, yeah, you always think about it a little bit, even if, you know, you trust the training and everything, you're always just kind of like, what if? And, like, honestly, in my head, I was like, you know, this can either go really well or, like, you know, maybe this goes bad. Like, who knows? But, like, I think, and honestly, I think that's a good lesson in itself is, like, I kind of dropped the expectations of, like, what the race is to come. And I almost, like, traded my expectation for, you know, embracing what was going to happen out there. And just more being open to it. And I think that in itself led to a better result because, like, I wasn't expecting, like, to have, you know, a stellar day and I wasn't expecting to have, like, a bad day. It was just more so like, let's just see what happens. And I think when we trade our expectations for that, like, that can really help us to just be more open to the moment. And if we've been good in our training, then the training will reveal itself in a good race strategy. And ultimately we end up surprising ourselves. And when we surprise ourselves, we get more momentum. And I think that's generally what happened to me out there. So that is, that's kind of how I approach that there too. And then challenges throughout, touch through that for sure. Let's see next. Did you have a specific speed you wanted to maintain and still feel fresh at the finish? Yeah, I wasn't kind of really going for speed. I was more so just going for, like, my intensity. Like, I really wanted to, like, start the race 2 to 3 RPE, kick it to a 4 to 5 RPE around, like, mile 13. And then, like, the last 7 miles, really wanted to hit it 6 to 7 RPE. And I think I really did nail that pretty well. And I still felt, I don't want to say fresh at the end. Like, I definitely felt like I ran 31 miles, but I definitely felt like I could keep going. Like, I felt like I could, you know, run a 50 miler at the effort that I was going at and where my body was at. So yeah, I wanted to cross the finish line knowing that I finished strong and, like, yeah. And I think that goal was achieved because I felt like I did finish strong. So yeah, that was my approach to that one. Next question, average pace that you trained at, what was your pace for the race? Did you lead the race the whole time? So taking that backwards, did I lead the race the whole time? Yes, I did. Pace for the race, again, 8:55 average pace with 4,500 feet of climbing. And then the average pace I trained at. So this is going to go in the Crokinona training episode because it's more so, again, I'm training for Crokinona. Wasn't necessarily training for this race. But it's interesting. A lot of my most of my training has been around like 850 to like 920 minute miles. Like that's been like most of my training. And a lot of that has been like really easy, like 2 to 3 RPE kind of stuff, like super, super, super easy. Just because I know Cocodona is going to be, you know, not this like blazing fast race. So like that was a big thing on that too. And so, and you know, it's interesting because like, you know, I've been working with Joe McConaughey, and trying to get to like, you know, his style of training and things like that. And yeah, it was cool to kind of see like play out like pretty well, which has been great. So super, super stoked about that. Cool. And then a lot of these other questions, I believe I already answered in the plan. So we are good to go. Well, that's it, everybody. Well, thank you so much, everybody, for your support, for if you reached out, if you commented on any of the posts, if you sent a message, if you sent the text, like wishing me congratulations. Like, I appreciate it so much. It means the world to me to have just such an amazing community around me, and just know that I'm very, very stoked and very, very grateful to continue to be on this journey with all of you, and so excited for, I hope this episode was helpful as you head into your races, whatever that be might be, whether it's a tune-up race, whether it's a goal race, whatever it is. I hope this race was helpful for you to learn about your own strategies in your races and helping you to finish your next ultra. And yeah, next episode is going to be the Cocodona recap training episode, so stay tuned for that. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out to me at everydayultrapodcast@gmail.com. I'm still playing a little bit of catch up from my honeymoon, so if you did send me an email, I'm just getting back to everybody as soon as I can for sure. So just know, just heads up, it's taken a few days to kind of clear out the inbox and clear out everything on there too. But also too, if you are interested in hiring me as your coach, I would love to help you finish your next ultra. Right now we are on a wait list, but you can get on the wait list by also emailing me at everydayultrapodcast@gmail.com, and I'll be happy to add you on the wait list, which would be first come, first serve the next time opportunities are open. And yeah, if you have any questions, reach out. If you'll be at Black Canyon this weekend, please come say hi. And yeah, I'm really, really stoked for you all. And then if you want to connect with me on Instagram, I'm on Instagram as well. And yeah, would love to cheer you on your next ultra. But anyways, my friend, thank you all for the support. Thank you for listening. I appreciate you all. And remember, my friends, be a better endurance athlete every day. And we'll talk again real soon. Take care.